Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another live edition of BAMS Radio. I am Thomas Watts. I am your host for the evening. I am trying to get Hampton Zipper on with me. Thank God for technical issues on a podcast. Gotta love it. I think I've got him now. Hampton, you got me? How we doing?
I got you. You got me?
Yes, thank you. I apologize. It has been a wild day. I have been a little under the weather for the past couple of days. So I was frantically catching up. I looked up from my work PC and was like, oh crap, I've got to get this thing done. Let's do the dang thing. But, you know, talk about a first world problem. Leave work to talk about Alabama football, as is normal on our Monday evenings. I am Thomas Watts, joined by Hampton Zipper of the Pigskin Cafe. We took a break for the holidays, but we are back talking college football, the Alabama Crimson Tide, and the ReliaQuest Bowl. Hampton, did you have a Merry Christmas, and do you have any fun New Year's Eve plans?
I did have a very Merry Christmas, Thomas. It was good spending some time with family, getting to see some friends I hadn't seen in a while, and just all around a really good holiday. And as of now, the only plans I have for New Year's Eve is hopefully watching the Alabama Crimson Tide roll tomorrow in what will be an interesting game and matchup versus Michigan Wolverines, but nothing too exciting. What about you, man?
Oh, geez. So this is the downside to when you start dating young ladies. Young ladies expect plans. So all you single gentlemen out there, know that is the thing. So I have a dinner planned with some of her friends and some of my friends, and then we're going for either board games or bourbons. I don't really know how the evening is going to evolve. But before that happens, we do have a little bit of business to handle with Alabama versus Michigan. Now, like every live BAMS radio show, you are welcome to call in to talk to Hampton and I at 516-418-5589. We'd absolutely love to hear from you. We also have a back chat. If you want to just join the chat, I'm tweeting the link in a moment. You can ask me questions. We can talk about whatever, and Hampton and I'll react. But otherwise, you know, we'll just be rolling. Hit us up on BAMS Radio as well. But Hampton, you know, I kind of buried the lead. Bama versus Michigan. Let's go 50,000 feet because we haven't had a chance to talk in a couple of weeks, and I think things have changed since the last time we talked. What's your, you know, 50,000-foot impression of this Michigan Wolverines team, given the fact that a lot of their top-end talent has chosen to opt out for this bowl game?
My impression of this Michigan team is that Alabama should thoroughly handle their business if they come with the right mindset, a good game plan, which I'm pretty confident in, because Kalen DeBoer this year has shown probably Alabama's two best games this year were versus Georgia, versus LSU, a bye week came before. Now he had 3 or 4 weeks of preparation, almost a month of preparation for Michigan. And like you mentioned, with all the opt-outs that they have, I think Alabama is thoroughly better than this Michigan team. I was kind of not concerned, but, you know, there's a guy or two they had on offense that I thought could pose a problem. Both their leading rusher and their second leading rusher are not playing in this game. And then I'm not 100% sure if Colton Loveland is playing or not, but if he isn't, that's another key piece.
He gone.
So he's, I mean, that those three guys right there are the bulk of their offensive production. So Alabama's defense, in my opinion, this year has been the strength of their team, which who had that on their bingo card coming into the year. But I don't think this Michigan offense can really attack them and exploit any matchups, because I really don't think there's any advantageous matchups they have out there. And then defensively, Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant, I know both of those guys have declared for the NFL draft, but are they playing Thomas tomorrow?
I don't believe so. And also Josiah Stewart has opted out. So that's some talent on the front that Alabama does not have to contend with. So
yeah.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
It is going to be an uphill battle for the Michigan Wolverines. And with that being said, and with everybody from Alabama who hasn't transferred, with all of them playing in this game, I expect a blowout. I expect Alabama to have this game in hand early, and hopefully, we can see some of the younger guys who haven't gotten a lot of playing time this year get the majority of the reps in the second half. But what do you make of this matchup, Thomas?
Well, so spoiler alert, you and I are generally aligned. Again, if you have thoughts about this matchup, give us a call, 516-418-5589. We'd love to hear from you. So I'm gonna borrow a Josh Pate-ism, because I really like it. To me, this is a freeze point game for both Alabama and Michigan. And for those that are not listeners to Josh Pate's show, but the freeze point game is essentially a metaphor for everything you do works beyond up to a certain point. And beyond that certain point, nothing works. Like, everything falls to pieces. So, in that mindset, let's assume, to build out this argument, let's assume that the University of Michigan is bringing everybody that they played throughout the regular season with. And let's think about, what does the Michigan game plan look like to beat Alabama? To me, Hampton, defensively, the game plan looks very similar to what we saw against the Oklahoma Sooners, and in some ways against the Tennessee Volunteers. The defense is going to have to really hold the Alabama offense down. They're literally going to extend this metaphor. They're going to have to freeze up the Alabama offense. Okay, fine. Let's look at the other side of the ball. The other side of the ball, you have the Michigan offense, which is just bad. It just is. It's so bad. The best portion of their offense is their running game, which is in the 60s. Their passing game is in the 120s, if you're being charitable. So not very good. The offense, you have to, Michigan has to play complementary football. The offense is going to have to try and get a ton of bites at the apple to try and get beyond the freezing point, again, using the Josh Pate metaphor. Okay, that to me is the Michigan game plan. Are they going to be able to install some option veer principles, which Alabama's defense has struggled with? 100%. They have the time to do it. But here's the problem. Mason Graham is a top 10 NFL draft pick. He wrecked the Alabama offensive line last year, and he did a great job wrecking everybody he played this year. Kenneth Grant, not a slouch. Josiah Stewart, not a slouch. So suddenly the Michigan defense sitting on the Alabama offense seems like a stretch. Well, let's be kind and say it seems like a stretch. All right, cool. For me, what's going to be the big thing that we're going to figure out in the first quarter again, with Alabama playing Michigan, is how good are the backups? And look, it's the NIL era. I refuse to believe that a guy like, you know, A'shaun Robinson is going to play spot duty as a true freshman, as a defensive end or a defensive tackle. I just don't think that's going to happen. There's too much money involved. So for me, I think there's going to be a significant step back for the Michigan defense. I love Wink Martindale. Wink Martindale is a great defensive coordinator. He did wonderful things with the Ravens. And I'm not going to say he's as good as Kevin Minter was last year for the Michigan Wolverines, but he's certainly in the conversation, and he has enough time to draw up some stuff that will confuse Jalen Milroe. But to me, he doesn't have the proven horses. And suddenly, the very thin game plan path that Michigan has to have to beat the Alabama Crimson Tide becomes, you know, what was thin becomes even thinner. And that's alarming to me if I'm a Michigan fan. For me, the line is anywhere from Alabama by 10 to Alabama by 13 with a total around 43 or 44. Honestly, with the opt-outs, I think that's low. I think the line might be right, maybe-ish, but that total feels low. And the only reason the total is low is because the Alabama offense has had fits and starts. But if the Michigan offense has a couple of turnovers, which if there's one thing you can say about Kane Womack's defense is it generates turnovers at a high clip. If Michigan has a couple of disadvantageous turnovers, man, I have a hard time seeing how they're going to win. I would have loved to have seen both of these rosters at full strength because I think it would have been a wild, fun game. But this ain't that, and I think Michigan's the decided underdog today, Hampton, or tomorrow, excuse me, Hampton. And I mean, for me, I'm glad of it because you and I were both singing the praises of Ty Simpson. We wanted to see him. Unfortunately, our friend Air Mailrow is still airmailing footballs, but maybe he'll only airmail in the first half and we'll get to see something that we actually care about in the second half. But yeah, I'm like you. I think Alabama should win this pretty decisively given the differences in roster.
Well, doggone, Thomas, just come out and say the quiet part out loud. I'll say this and then kick it back to you and we can kind of keep talking about maybe some young players that we're really looking forward to seeing their role increased in this game. But really my only hope for tomorrow is that maybe, just maybe, we'll throw our first passing touchdown since Tennessee, if you take out the Mercer game. That's all I'm hoping. One passing touchdown versus power four competition. I know it's a lot to ask.
That's low-hanging fruit there, bud. That's low-hanging fruit.
I know it's a lot to ask, but can that just be my late Christmas wish or my New Year's resolution, however you want to look at it?
Well, I think – no, I don't think that's unfair. I very much want to see this game. So let's take a step back, and I'm going to answer your question with a larger point. For me, to your point, it's pretty accurate. This is the jumping off point for the 2024 season, or the 2025 season, excuse me. This is, you know, what have we said since we started doing the live show between you and I? There've been some bumps. The bumps have either been because of staff or players or misunderstanding the SEC or just roster limitation. All right, cool. Let's take that, put it in a bin and throw it in the side. This is the entire staff. And I have to say, Hampton, the fact that Alabama staff didn't get raided is a big deal. You know, the crew is the same as it sits. Now, maybe Black Monday, the NFL's coming up here. Shoot, that'd be a wild show next Monday if Alabama starts – the rumors start circling that Alabama's going to lose some coaches with NFL moves. But anyway, let's just assume that doesn't happen. This is the jumping-off point for the 2025 season. It's the – this is what happens when we have a chance to adapt and learn and self-scout to a level, and get healthy, and see what's what, and go from there. I think that's the big meta point here. And in that vein, I know I'm putting a ton into a single game, but, you know, we talk about what it means. What have been some of the problems with Kane Womack's defense? Two of Alabama's losses to Vanderbilt and Oklahoma were to 6-6 football teams that had an extra week to prepare. Within that extra week, they either repped a bunch or installed a bunch of wing veer principles. And If you think the Oklahoma offense looks the same against Alabama as it looked before that, you're insane. Like you're just crazy. So we're going to leave that there.
Respectfully, you're insane.
Respect. What is that? With all due whatever anybody says with all due respect, it's like quietly F off. That's the subtext. Like, with all due respect, you're crazy. But more than anything, that was a vulnerability that other teams exposed. Fine, great. You can call it a personnel deficiency. You can call it a whatever. Fix that. Show me something. Fix that. Fix that with your guys that you've had a month to rep and be like, if they do a triple option, this is how you fix it. That's the jumping off point. Jalen Milroe is going to do Jalen Milroe things. He'll have three or four plays where you're like, holy Moses, if that could have been what you did all year, Alabama is the number one team in the country. And then he'll have five or six plays where I'm just like, you know, a football is oblong shaped, and what you do is you run it that way, not the way you just ran. You know that, right? You know, like, the point is to get the oblong shaped thing across the goal line for 6 points, and you'll just, you know, smack yourself in the face. But again, for me, it's continued growth. That's what I would call this entire 2024 season: continued growth from staff, understanding, learning, growing. And this is kind of the capstone. It's both the capstone of the 2024 transition into 2025. If we're having this conversation next Monday at 7:50 p.m. and Alabama was in a 20-13 dogfight against Michigan, I can just tell you, I'm raging, because that seems utterly inappropriate given what these two rosters are right now. That's what I'm really leaning into this game, Hampton. It's a capstone point. Alabama should win going away, you know, solidly 10, 14, 17, 21 points. And if they don't, we suddenly need to have a conversation about whether Kalen DeBoer and this Alabama team has taken a much more significant step back than you or I, both admitted Alabama fans, are willing to accept.
Yeah, I think that's a spot-on analysis. And I truly believe in my heart of hearts that we're not going to be having that conversation next Monday. I think Michigan is too depleted, as is, to really push or stress Alabama in this game. If they do, like you said, there's something bad wrong. And my concern level for 2025 and beyond is heightened a little bit. Now, it's still not, you know, we're not hitting the alarm bell. It's not DEFCON 5, but I'm definitely more concerned and go into that year with a little more hesitancy. But, you know, we talked about a bunch of guys who have left, and I think, you know, we talked on our last show, there wasn't anybody that left that you and I were just super torn up about. You know, Justice Haynes left. Wish him the best of luck at Michigan, but Richard Young.
Can we both mea culpa? Can we both mea culpa that Jalen Mbakwe, we were ready to sort of grind our teeth, and then he stuck with Alabama? I'll apologize for both of us. Thank you for sticking with Alabama, Jalen Mbakwe. We appreciate you. But please continue.
No, I'm glad you said that, because, yeah, we went on a 30-minute diatribe about how Jalen Mbakwe's situation highlights what is wrong with college football, and then he ends up saying literally less than 24 hours later, but we're happy he's back. And actually, it's a good transition, Thomas, because He comes back, and now he's going to play receiver. So we're going to get to see him in this game at a new position and how he's acclimating to a brand-new side of the ball, even though he played offense at Clay Chalkville in high school. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of the receivers who we haven't seen much of this year, a guy like Rico Scott, a guy like Jaron Hamilton. Both of those guys, I think, are going to receive significant reps tomorrow. A guy like Richard Young, I know I mentioned Justice Haynes leaving, and I said, Richard Young, Susan, we are here, and I'm happy for it.
Take your victory lap.
Richard Young,
just do it. Hampton, just take your Richard Young victory lap. Just do it. I'm prepared. Go ahead.
Thomas, I'll just say, I tried to tell you after Missouri game, brother, I tried to let you get on the Richard Young Ranger. We're going to call it a Ford Ranger. We're going to be running over folks. We're going to be partying in the back. It's going to be a fun ride, and you politely declined my invitation. But I'm excited for what he's going to show tomorrow. I think fans are going to be really impressed with the toughness that he runs with. I think he might even hit a big play. Like, he might even, have a 40, 50-yard run in there, which would be really exciting. And I think he's going to be a staple of the offense next year. And then defensively, a couple guys that I'm really looking forward to seeing, and it's Say Mincy, who he's going to be playing in place of Malachi Moore. So it's going to have Say Mincy and my guy Bray Hubbard back there. That's going to be really fun, even though I don't think he's going to be ultimately tested in the passing game because Michigan is so inept from that perspective. But I'm looking forward to seeing him get increased reps, especially with the glowing remarks that Kane Womack had about him about a week or two ago and how he's really improved in the bowl practices and is kind of ready to take that next step. And then the other guy who it might shock a lot of Alabama fans, Keon Keeley. That was another guy that Kane Womack spoke glowingly of and that he felt he was going to become a really good player at Alabama. He's as excited as he's ever been about him. I wonder if he gets any reps tomorrow in that new number 8 jersey that he is wearing. So those are a few guys that I'm kind of looking for to take advantage of their increased playing time. But is there anybody else that you're kind of keeping your eye on tomorrow, Thomas, or what do you think of the guys that I mentioned?
So for me, it's so Bray Hubbard to me is the guy, and I'm not going to steal your thunder. He's much more inside the box safety than anything, you know, very old school. If it wasn't completely absurd, he would have the neck roll a la, you know, fullback 20 years ago. And I don't think he should have that, but that's what I mean. The big thing that I want to see, honestly, continues to be the Richard Youngs of the world, and less players and more scheme. So I think to me, like, let's talk about the defense. What I wanted Kane Womack to do as a defensive coordinator, and I think he was reluctant to do, but I think he's slowly embraced it as the season has gone on. Excuse me. I think he's gone away from his daddy Dave's 4-2-5 and gotten much more into a multiple defense. You know, 3-man front, 4-man front, 5-man front in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I want to see that continue to evolve because to me, defense in college football and defense in the NFL, you can't just be like, so what? How often are you in base? Talk about Nick Saban's defense. It was base 3-4, a 3-4 alignment. But even Nick Saban said, we're almost always in nickel, which is, 3-3-5? So If we're always a nickel, that's your base defense. So I want to see more multiplicity. And I think Womack was going that way. Sometimes with three down linemen, it kind of made me scratch my head. But I want to see personnel groupings. I want to see how Womack deploys his defense. I want to see how Alabama deploys their offense. How often have we seen, to this point, Jam Miller, Justice Haynes, two back sets? Now it would be Jam Miller, Richard Young. Cool, rock on. But who's out there? How do they do things? How do they reset stuff? Is there some sort of something that the Alabama offensive staff picks up in film review that you can overload a side and you can have an explosive like the Jam Miller touchdown against Wisconsin where everybody followed Jalen Milroe and Jam Miller just ran for a 40-yard touchdown? That's what I want to see, because to me, I'm not saying that I'm not excited about the players that Alabama has on the roster, but I'm excited to see continued schematic evolution, because one of the things that Kalen DeBoer has chosen to do, early enrollees have been practicing. Now, Saban did it too, not saying Saban didn't, but early enrollees have been seeing significant reps. They've been making positive contributions, and that's the future. You know, we're seeing Keelan Russell light the Under Armour All-America game up. But that's the thing. I'm not going so far as to say the Kane Womack scheme or the Kalen DeBoer scheme is plug and play. I'm not going that far. But to me, when I look at the staff, a lot of what the staff wanted to do was limited by personnel. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like the conversion was always going to be sort of a push and pull. But now in this month where you've had a chance to get healthy and you've had a chance to self-scout and you've had a chance to understand what your roster can do, particularly against a very offensively limited opponent, that's what I want to see. Like, I'll be absolutely raging next Monday when you and I have our conversation if Michigan runs for 300 yards against Alabama. I will be losing my mind, because that is that to me is the ultimate indictment of this coaching staff. Now, that said, if the opposite happens and Michigan runs for 100, I'm okay with that, because Michigan's a run first team. And if you have players to spotlight or if you have schemes to spotlight, give Hampton and I a call at 516-418-5589. We'd love to hear from you. We're not going to have a really long show tonight because there's just mostly Michigan and then the transfer portal. And maybe, just maybe, Hampton will put some bourbon in the IV bag that I'm ripping on right now, and we'll talk about basketball. But otherwise, we'll be talking football mostly on this show. But that's my thing, Hampton. I want to see schematic evolution. I want to see new players and how they fit. And look, if the Zay Mincies of the world make a positive contribution, awesome. But for me, it's crispness. It's understanding what's going on. It's making even if it doesn't work, it's being in the right place based on what I think your gap assignment is. That's what I want to see, because this is the first time that this staff and these players as a unit have had a chance to take a step back, take a deep breath, and say, this is what I want you to do, and for the players to say, if you want me to do this, I need to do these things. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting perspective to have, and something that, you know, oftentimes when you're looking at these bowl games, that is not something that us as fans account for as much, the schematic side of it. We're all looking at the shiny new toy like I am, like this player and this player who hadn't played. But I think it is important to see if – I think some of the trends later in the year that were promising? Because I know you mentioned, you know, Kane Womack being kind of very rigid in his philosophy early on about, you know, this defense is my defense, my base is my base. And he didn't do a great job of matching personnel, especially when Alabama played Vanderbilt. But the crazy thing is, when Alabama played Oklahoma, I thought he did a much better job of that in the second half. You know, Alabama held Oklahoma, I think, to 40 yards rushing in the second half. They really limited their attack. And part of that was changing personnel up that they had on defense to account for the type of offense that Oklahoma was employing. The issue was the offense completely wet the bed. Two quick turnovers, two quick scores, and then the game was out of hand. Airmail.
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 My Christmas presents got here. I'm just going to assume Jalen Milroe threw them to me, so we're just going to go for that.
Jeez. Well, hopefully he gave a better attempt on the delivery of your packages than he did on tackling the defender as he was running to score a touchdown on his pick six, but I digress. But I'm really interested, and if Michigan was playing their full complement of starters, especially on defense, I'm not a betting man. I'm not a gambler. I would go to FanDuel, and I would find a prop of Alabama three and out on their first drive on offense, and I would put everything, all chips on the table on the going three and out if Michigan was playing their full complement of defenders. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't think you're going to see anything radically different on offense than what you've seen all year. Going to be a lot of quarterback run with Jalen Milroe, and, you know, all that kind of comes with that. A lot of five wide. But I'm interested to see maybe if there's a wrinkle or two that they kind of employ. And maybe in this game with the depleted Michigan secondary, especially with Will Johnson not playing, maybe we can get the deep ball and the vertical passing game going, because that has really been – and, I mean, it's been absent from Alabama for, what, I mean, maybe since the Georgia game, Thomas? Like, I can't recall – well, Vanderbilt. We hit one against Vanderbilt, and then that was the last deep ball that Alabama hit on all year. Now, part of that was Jalen Milroe overthrow, Jalen Milroe not seeing it, not delivering the ball, and then some of it was drops. I mean, Ryan Williams dropped an absolute dime. Honestly, one of Jalen Milroe's best throws of the year versus Auburn. So it's been a whole complement of issues in the deep passing game, but maybe we can get that going tomorrow against Michigan.
I would be perfectly okay if Alabama had a couple of explosive passes. And here's the thing. Again, going back to what I said previously, Michigan has to keep this game within a score. You know, 13, if Michigan will have won the half if it's 13-10. Michigan will have lost the half if it's 17-3. And how do you get to 17-3? A couple of explosives, a couple of plays that Michigan punts, Alabama starts at the Alabama 20, let's just say 20 for the sake of argument, and suddenly within one play, Alabama's at the Michigan 20, you know, 20 itself. That's a 40-yard pass play, or 60-yard, excuse me. The Michigan 25, that's a 55-yard pass play. Suddenly gets a whole lot different when you're calling offense in positive territory. And that's going to be the issue. You know, we said already that the Michigan offense or if Michigan commits turnovers, particularly on their side of the field, it's game over, because Alabama should be able to convert them into something. But more than that, if Alabama was able to get the explosive pass game going, and Will Johnson, we hadn't talked about the Michigan secondary, but Will Johnson, all everything corner, he's not playing tomorrow. So we'll see what Michigan has in the back end left over. But for me, the things that make this game really put Michigan in a hole as you say, are explosives. I want to see that at least try and get it going. And, you know, I'm not going to say all the explosive problems are Jalen Milroe. I'm not going to say all the explosive problems are Ryan Williams or Jeremy Bernard. That's reductive and unfair to both of those players. For me, just make it work. Just make it work. Because once Ryan Williams, Jeremy Bernard, whoever, completes that 40-yard bomb, does Michigan adjust? Or do they let Jalen Milroe bomb away? Because if Jalen Milroe can bomb away, this game's over. If
yep.
Michigan adjusts away from an 8-man box, this game's over. And that's the big thing. You know, turnovers are their whole other thing, where if Michigan fumbles within their own red zone game, you know, that's 3 points for sure, probably seven. That's one side of it. The other side is if the narrow path that we talked about with the Michigan defense, whatever it is, being able to sit on the Alabama offense doesn't work for whatever reason, whether it's explosive passes or Alabama weirdly being able to sustain drives. You know, we talked about it over and over. Alabama 3rd and 7+ is a nightmare. Alabama 3rd and 3- is almost a guarantee. If Michigan can't get to that point and Alabama is able to complete some explosives, it's game over. Because Hampton, here's the thing we haven't really talked about. There's not a world that exists that Michigan 17-3 or 20-3 at half, Michigan makes this a football game in the second half. What do you think? Do you think Alabama's defense will just be able to sit on this crew?
Oh, I absolutely do. Other than trick plays and wacky stuff, or if they, you know, hide Bryce Underwood in Alex Orji's jersey and try to sneak him out there, I don't see how Michigan can generate offense at a consistent rate to stay in the game. I it is hard for me to see a path to victory for them, barring something just wacky happening. I mean, I know that's not great analysis, but that's honestly just how
well,
I feel.
No. Hey, look. Don't give the idea of sneaking Bryce Underwood out there, because suddenly there will be a lawsuit and an injunction, and Bryce Underwood will be QB1 for Michigan tomorrow. So let's be careful with all of that. But yes, fair point.
Hey, well, you know, it'll instead of you know, the Connor Stallions thing got shut down, so now they had to resort to something else. So it's just natural escalation, you know.
Ah, jeez. And it's funny, so we make jokes about this, because to me, college football makes me want to pull my hair out. But, well, all five hairs that are left on my head. But, you know, okay, if you have a thought about the Michigan game, let's take a step back, and then I'm going to get to my point, and we're going to kind of transition into something that's a little more fun. If you want to call us, talk to us about Michigan or something else, give us a call, 516-418-5589. We'd love to hear from you. But otherwise, you know, Hampton, the Alabama Crimson Tide playing is not the only football game. I know, crazy things happen in college football. Not the only college football game that happens this week. But even more than that, media. And I swear, when James Franklin made the comment, the Penn State head coach, that Nick Saban should be the commissioner of college football, I about knocked my chair over. Are you a big fan of the Nick Saban as college football commissioner? Because I have many, many, many questions about how that would actually work. But what do you think about all of that?
I mean, I think it sounds great in theory, and I have no doubt that Nick Saban, if given ultimate autonomy, ultimate power to do whatever and what he says is gospel and it is a law, that he would do a great job. I have no doubt about that. The problem is there are so many legal things. There's so many structural issues there's not even a framework for how that would even be accomplished. I mean, what does he like? What does he do? Like, self-appoint himself as commissioner, even though there isn't one? There would be a lot that would have to be worked out. I have no doubt that he would go a long way in fixing some of the mess that this sport is currently. But also, I'll say this. I mean, I don't have a lot to say on the subject other than I think he'd do a great job, just like I think he would do good at about anything he sets his mind to. But the man coached for 50 years, and he got out of coaching because it was such a headache, especially at his age. He didn't want to adapt anymore. I have no doubt he could have adapted, but he didn't want to adapt to NIL and deal with what NIL had become, which is not what it was intended for. So why in the world would him at 73 years old want to step in the hornet's nest of dealing with the issue not only on, you know, the scale of Alabama, but the entire country? I think that part of it is what doesn't quite make sense and probably wouldn't work, but also for the other structural issues, lack of organization, I just don't know how it is plausible for that to actually come to be.
Well, you completely stole my point, because it's a wonderful idea in theory. It's a completely different ball of wax in execution. Do I think the idea of it is great? Yes. But, you know, you only need to look so far as the Diego Pavia situation. Diego Pavia is playing an extra year at Vanderbilt based on a preliminary injunction that essentially argues that JUCO's predicated from earning NIL rights. Sure. I think the problem is that JUCOs don't get the spotlight that the quarterback of the team that beats the number one team in the country get, but okay, we'll go with that. We'll go with your argument. And that's the litigious society problem. You know, Nick Saban wants to try and do the collective bargaining thing or set salary caps in NIL. They're going to get sued. They just are. Should they get sued? Maybe, maybe not. I don't really care about should. I saw that and was just like, cool. I also like to live in dream world, except not. So when we talk about this, or when we think about this, I'm just sort of like, guys, like, yes, I think Nick Saban would do a great job, because Nick Saban has, to a level that almost nobody in the United States understands, has a grasp of the particulars of this problem, both on the player side and on the booster NIL coaches side. He probably has as broad an understanding as anybody. Do I think he'd do a good job because of that? Yes. But I don't know how he'd stand up. I don't know how he would deal with the litigious society side of everything. But okay, Hampton.
Mm-hmm.
One last thing. Let's do score picks for Michigan-Bama, because it's been about 45 minutes. We don't have any callers, but we appreciate folks listening. Let's do score picks for Michigan-Bama, and then let's do maybe 5-10 minutes about college football playoff nonsense, because, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, this feels like second verse, same as the first, but a whole lot louder and a little bit worse for every game but one. But what do you think Alabama versus Michigan? As I said earlier, line 10.5, total, let's call it 44. What's your final score pick for Alabama versus Michigan in the ReliaQuest Bowl tomorrow?
I'm going to say this game is going to play out very similarly, maybe a little more lopsided than when Alabama played Wisconsin in game 3 of the year. I'm going to go Alabama 48, Michigan 10. I think Alabama gets off gets out to a huge lead, gets to play many of the backups. Some of this may be me wish casting, but that is what I would like to see. It should happen with the talent advantage that Alabama has, and hopefully it acts as a springboard going into 2025. And, it's the last game for Jalen Milroe, probably. Last game for Tyler Booker, a guy like Jahad Campbell. And, we've been fair and loud with our criticism of Jalen Milroe for the past 2 years, and I think ultimately we were proven correct. But I will give him, Booker, and Jahad credit with this. During the transition, they could have left. All three decided to stay and tried to keep the team together and leave a legacy. And no, it did not end up like they anticipated or that the fans wanted. But I appreciate them for staying and laying a solid foundation for Kalen DeBoer to really build up this program in the way that he envisioned. So give me Alabama 48-10. What are you thinking, Thomas?
So I said this on the podcast version with Redfish, and I'm going to repeat it. To Jalen Milroe, closing time, one less call for alcohol, so finish your whiskey or beer. Closing time, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. And with that in mind, this is Jalen Milroe's last game. He will not be in an Alabama uniform next year. Frankly, I think he'll be on an NFL roster getting a GM fired. But hey, beyond that, I do think Alabama will win this game. I'm not quite as bullish as you are, Hampton. I think that Jalen Milroe is going to Jalen Milroe enough to where you're just wanting to scream. Alabama should win this game. I had 27-10 on Bama's radio. I'm going to push that a little bit and go 31-13. Alabama would cover, and they would be slightly over. For me, it is a swan song. For me, it is the University of Alabama football team turning the page from the Nick Saban era, formally, for Kalen DeBoer to take the reins, and we'll see. I will tell you, if we get back together next Monday, Hampton, and Alabama has done the 48-10 destruction that you're predicting, man, I'll be so high on this team. Oh my God, you will see the glow from West Alabama compared to where you are. That will be me because I will be so excited. But I believe it when I see it. But, you know, one other thing, there are college football playoff games going on, and we don't need to beat this dead horse because 9 times out of 10, I think you and I are going to be aligned. 4 games, Texas versus Arizona State, Oregon versus Ohio State, Penn State versus Boise. I'm not even going to give them a state because it's not. And Georgia, Notre Dame. Who you got in those games for the college football playoff?
I've got Arizona State not winning. I've got Penn State rolling.
Talk about
over
a left
turn.
I was about to absolutely lose my mind live if you had said that. Wow.
No. I'd be I think they probably keep it close for a little bit. I do respect Kenny Dillingham, and I love me some Cam Scatabo. I love watching that kid play, but I think Texas wins that game for sure. I think Penn State beats Boise. I'm interested to see if Ginty can get anything going against what I think is a good Penn State defense. And Oregon-Ohio State is going to be a really fun game. I mean, it's arguably, you know, the best game of the regular season. It's either that or Alabama-Georgia. In my opinion, it's a top three game.
And I think we're going to get another one when they tee off on Tuesday, or not Tuesday, on Wednesday. And I'll say this, if Ohio State plays anything like they played against Tennessee, I mean, I'm not missing groundbreaking analysis because I think everybody will agree with this. They're winning the national championship. I mean, that performance was quite impressive against Tennessee, but I think Oregon is much more equipped to be able to go pound for pound, blow for blow with them more than Tennessee was. Because let's be truthful here, Thomas, Tennessee had a lot of issues, especially offensively, that weren't able to be exploited by many teams this year. Alabama should have beaten Tennessee. Their secondary isn't very good, and you saw what Will Howard and those Ohio State receivers did to them, what Alabama tried to do to them, and they did not have the same luck, and I'm not going to get into why. But I'm going to go – I think Ohio State is going to get the better of Oregon this time. I think it's crazy that this is a second-round matchup, which – again, speaks to the format of the college football playoff being dumb. I was glad to see today that they're apparently going to make a change next year where the top four conference champions do not automatically get a bye. I think that is a great, great change. You know, it winning it will get you into the field, but it will not get you a bye. So give me Ohio State in that one. And then finally, Georgia-Notre Dame is interesting. I probably think a little higher of Notre Dame than you do. Riley Mills being hurt for them, the defensive lineman, is a big blow. He's a really good player for them. I'm going to lean Georgia, but I think Notre Dame keeps this one close. I really, really do. I think they're a different team from a mental toughness and a physical toughness perspective under Marcus Freeman than they were under Brian Kelly. I think they're more equipped to win a game like this than they have been in the past. But ultimately, I think they're very similar to Georgia, but just a slightly lesser version of it. So give me Georgia in that one. And I'm with you, Thomas. I think next round is when the college football playoff matchups get really intriguing. This round is just another of, oh, we've got a one or two that I'm looking forward to. But the other two, I could have gone without.
Certainly. And I'm with you on this. I think Texas is going to smoke Arizona State. I think Penn State is going to smoke Boise State. I respect the fact that Boise State gave Oregon a game early in the year, but I'm very good friends with a couple of Oregon fans. And one of the things that they consistently said to me was, man, Oregon looked rough early in the year. And I'm not attacking Oregon when I say that. I'm just explaining what they said to me and moving on. So when I have, you know, everyone always says, oh, Boise State was able to compete with the best team in the country in the regular season. I'm like, ah, okay, sure. But that completely ignores the fact that Oregon was bad for like the first month of the year. So I think those two are pretty easy. I think that Penn State is going to do roughly what to Boise State that they did to SMU. I think Texas is going to do roughly what Penn State did to SMU as well, because I think Arizona State is going to get their faces punched in. They've not seen anything like what Texas is bringing, and it's going to show. But the other two games, for me, Hampton, this college football playoff doesn't start until one of Texas, Ohio State, Oregon, or Georgia loses. Ironically, Ohio State and Oregon play each other. And for me, I'm leaning Ohio State. If you look back, so Ohio State played a great game against Oregon, and Oregon pulled off the win at home, but it was a one-point game. And if Will Howard had slid half a second earlier, Ohio State kicks a field goal, and they're beating Oregon. They're in the Rose Bowl. That's a big deal for the Big Ten. Oregon is still the newcomer in the Big Ten. They're Pac-12, but Rose Bowl was big there. And Ohio State has, while they still have offensive line problems, Ohio State is the most talented roster in college football. Ohio State specifically built their roster for winning a national title because the Ohio State boosters decided to go absolutely crazy after Michigan won a title. Not holding it against them, not judging them for it, but that is what that is. So give me Ohio State over Oregon. I think that's going to be a classic. That to me could 100% determine the national title winner. Because I think Oregon is that good, and I think Ohio State is just that little bit better. I think that the Ohio State defense will get away from their Ohio State was lucky in that they could rush four and generate pressure organically throughout most of the year, but they couldn't do it against Dylan Gabriel. And Dylan Gabriel ate their lunch in Eugene. I think they're going to get away from that. I think they're going to be able to pressure Dylan Gabriel and really stymie the Oregon offense. Give me Ohio State. And then Georgia-Notre Dame, look, I am not somebody that wants to lean on history, but looking at the rosters, I'm not a Notre Dame guy. I respect the fact that Notre Dame went into College Station and won in week one of the college football season. But Notre Dame has done functionally nothing since then. Now, to their credit, they have done functionally nothing against everybody, and they've annihilated them for it, minus the Northern Illinois thing, which is still just weird. Georgia is the second or third most talented team in the country. I think they have the best head coach in the country. I'll give Kirby Smart that. He was two behind Nick Saban. Now he's one. And Glenn Schumann, if you're being uncharitable, is top five DC in the country. I think whoever the hell they have running the offense. Oh, Mike Bobo. Mike Bobo is solidly in the 80s. Like trash can, like Oscar the Grouch is like, why are you in my trash can with me? What are you doing? But Kirby and Glenn will really frustrate Notre Dame. And I think Gunnar Stockton is actually going to help Mike Bobo. It's going to help Mike Bobo not be Mike Bobo, in that Stockton is not going to launch 50-yard bombs like Carson Beck. But Stockton is going to unbalance the Notre Dame defense, which, as you accurately said, has lost their best, arguably, defensive lineman to an injury, with the quarterback run game. I don't want to challenge the Notre Dame secondary, but I will challenge the Notre Dame secondary if you make them take a false step, which Gunnar Stockton can do better than Carson Beck. Give me Georgia in that game. And moving forward, honestly, Hampton, the Final Four, this is one of the weird times where if you give me a Final Four of Texas, Ohio State, or Oregon, I'll give you that much. If you give me those two on one side playing and Penn State, Georgia, oh, man, throw me a beer, throw me a fattening set of nachos, and leave me the hell alone. I will become one with the couch and watch it. That's exciting to me, and I can't wait for it. But we'll see. Honestly, at the end of the day, I really do think the only one in question is is Oregon, Ohio State. And that's, to me, going to force a reevaluation of everything because, it's going to be really hard to take Notre Dame being in a conference that got absolutely smashed in the playoff and has not had a good bowl season, being affiliated with the ACC, it's going to be hard to take that. And then when they ran up against a team that had a pulse talent-wise, brand-wise, all the things-wise, if they get beaten again, why are you continuing to give these folks the benefit of the doubt? Is it the NBC contract? I mean, if that's the case, fine, but say it. Because it's hard to stomach, and this is where we get where it gets interesting. It's hard to stomach because the college football playoff, because of how many rounds it has, is going directly head-to-head in many cases with the NFL. What that means, mm-hmm. you've got to have a comparable product to the NFL. You literally have to pull Philadelphia Eagles fans from watching the Eagles versus whoever the hell they're playing. I think they've clinched a playoff spot and they're locked into their seed, but you have to pull Eagles fans from watching the Eagles playing and also ran in the last week of the season to watching Notre Dame get their faces punched in by a Georgia. Or, more accurately to this metaphor, you have to pull Eagles fans from watching Notre Dame annihilate Indiana. That's the game. Do I agree with commoditizing college football the way they have? Not really. This is perfectly predictable in all of its bailiwicks. But it is what it is, and that's the competition. So I think the Final Four with a college football playoff Final Four would have worked this year, given what we've seen. But, man, the playoff needs work. It's a tough spot, Hampton. But, you know, is what it is. We'll see. And honestly, you and I will probably roast each other depending on who wins these games. But, you know, what's your final thought? Why don't you plug the Pigskin Cafe to our listeners before we get on out of here?
Yeah, Tom, it's a very fun show with you tonight, man. And I'm looking forward to the playoff games. Hopefully we get a surprise or two good game instead of four crappy ones like we did the first round. And I hope Alabama comes out, takes care of business tomorrow, and we have a lot of fun and exciting things to talk about on our show next Monday. Really looking forward to that, and thank you so much for having me on. If you haven't already, go ahead and head over to the Pigskin Cafe on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button, leave us a like, leave us a comment, and hit that notification bell. We should have a Michigan-Alabama review out whenever the game ends sometime later in the week. Hadn't put out an episode in a few weeks, and really since the Iron Bowl ended, but may do one for that and maybe doing a couple other ones before the season officially ends. But, Thomas, always a pleasure, and I hope you have a happy new year and a happy new year, and Roll Tide to all of our listeners out there.
Thank you very much, Hampton. I will absolutely sub in for the Pigskin Cafe, excuse me. But otherwise, that is it for this episode of Live Bams Radio. Thank you so much for listening. And, you know, join us next Monday. Join us next Sunday. The next Sunday, it'll be Drew, DeArmond, William Redfish Barger, and myself reacting to the Michigan game, maybe reacting to the college football playoff and kind of setting the stage for 2025. If you are wanting to listen live, it'll be Hampton and I next Monday. But that is then. This is now. If you want to support us, BAMS Radio, patreon.com/BAMS Radio. Give us a follow at BAMS Radio on Twitter or X, you know, depending on your political bent. But that's it for this episode of Live BAMS Radio. Thank you so much. Have a happy new year. As I said on the live on the podcast version of BAMS, if you see a firework coming towards you, duck. But good night and roll tide.